From Deep Inside the Death Star, I'm Andrew Richards.
And I'm Bill Messmer.
And I'm Andy Lewis.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show about Windows internals and Microsoft internals. Bill and Andy are back. Well, yeah, same studio day for us, but Bill and Andy are back to talk about the debugger. We're going to dive deep into some of the new features that are available in the new SDK drop of the debugger. And I'll kind of leave it over to you, Bill and Andy, to jump in and tell us what awesome source you guys have developed.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of start with like an intro about why are we doing this. So as we've kind of said in the last episode, you know, there's this all this extensibility that we're trying to add with the debugger object model. And doing it in the classical extension of you've got a C, C++ extension, you're right. You've got like Andrew, you've seen Andrew's videos probably about all of the possible ways to write an extension and that type of stuff.
The 14-part series to write Hello World.
Yes, yeah. So one of our main goals was we need something simple, something I can write it, I can run it. And the second one is it should have been a well-known language. Like you said last episode, we got Descript, we have the .foreach syntax and that type of stuff. And all of that is just this really Windebug-specific thing, and no one wants to learn that unless they desperately, desperately need to. So JavaScript is a language that's fairly simple to learn. It's a well-known language. It's very easy to use. And there's no compiling or anything. It's just you hit run and you go.
And it's I don't know what it is, lenient?
You can, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a strict language, right?
Yeah.
You can get away with, you know, type.
Yeah, so
variability, I might use the word for it.
All our customers that like their C and C++ development will be terrified. But
yeah. So it's quite powerful. So you've built quite a large object model underneath it already that represents a lot of the information about the target. So maybe show us how you can leverage that in JavaScript based as ad hoc scripting and also as a more of a the backend side of things.
All right, so I've got the debugger up here, and I'll just walk through a couple of simple examples before we go into something a little bit more substantial. So when you first start, I've got the debugger up on command.exe, and when you first start it, you'll notice we've added a bunch of new commands. We get tab completion on the commands now, but there's a bunch of script commands that are in the debugger, right? And so one of the first things you can ask the debugger is like, what scripting environments it'll recognize? Okay, the JavaScript functionality that we've brought into the debugger, it's not, I don't want to say installed, it's not loaded by default. Mm-hmm. You can only have one instance of Chakra running in, that's the JavaScript engine, right, that powers Edge and IE. You can only have that once inside the process, and we know that there are some debugger extensions out there which may use that, so we didn't want to break them. Yeah. So you have to explicitly load. We ship this in the debugger now. There's this extension called jsprovider.dll, and it brings in the JavaScript environment.
Yep.
So once you do that, you can see now I recognize the fact that there's JavaScript extensions, right? And I can bring JavaScript extensions into this. All right, so
that's just added a whole additional namespace to the command window and everything else, right? That's really what it's done. So it reacts to particular names now?
So when you load a script, so there's a command here like .script load, right? If I load something that's .js, right, it will go to the provider that understands how to bridge the world of JavaScript with the world of the debugger.
Gotcha.
Right, just like there's one for NatViz that understands how to bridge the world of NatViz XML to the world of the debugger object model.
Gotcha.
So I'll go over, and I don't have a great code editing experience in WinDBG for this. I've just brought up VS Code so that I can have something that does some JavaScript syntax highlighting while we do some examples.
Yeah.
I'll just do a quick Hello World kind of example, and we can talk about how to load a script and what it actually does. So I'm just going to create a function called invoke script. This is kind of when you run a script, this is kind of like main in C, right? This is the function that's going to get called that does the body of whatever it is that you want to do in your script. And we've kind of namespaced this out kind of logically the way you would have, you know, managed code, the class library, right? We've kind of namespaced it out so that it's easier to find things. So there's host.diagnostics debug log.
And so what you're writing right now, this is all documented on MSDN.
Yep.
We will have that available when this is live. So yep. I'm going to say this is available, and there's a link below.
Yes. We'll hold the video until it's live.
Yes.
So okay. It's there.
And there'll be some samples that show you a bunch of these things as well.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to save that right now, right? So I've just got debug log, hello world. And I'm going to go back to my instance of the debugger, and now I can say script run channel 9 first.js. Right, and I can see I successfully loaded this JavaScript script, and you can see, right, I've got hello world output. That's kind of the
first. So I'm going to jump in straight away. How do I do DML? How do I make it have bold, for example?
How do you make it have bold?
Yeah.
Right now you can't.
Uh-oh.
And I'll talk about a why a little bit as we go into some of this. We want to get away from the debugger extensions that are text in and text out.
Yeah.
So you can return JavaScript objects across the boundary, which right, contain other objects or lists or containers.
Yep.
And we'll display those. And you'll be able to click through them. And we'll generate all of the DML automatically for that.
Gotcha.
You shouldn't have to do your own DML, because whatever is under you that you would be linking to should be all in the same world.
Gotcha.
You just return objects that contain objects, and we'll know how to generate all the DML from that.
So it's kind of, this one you just wrote, the hello world, it's more like an output debug string. It's not really
right.
meant to be.
Yeah.
This is not the point of it. It's
if you,
yeah.
This is also why the name is not printf. It's diagnostics.debuglog, right?
Gotcha.
We want to get people out of that just output text,
yeah.
right? It's about return. It's about doing some processing and returning
objects.
A collection or returning objects.
Gotcha.
It's a bit of a mindset change for people that have written older debugger extensions.
It is.
it's only I'm old and I agree.
Yeah, so I can go in and I can, you know, I can do an edit to this and go back and just rerun the script, right? I can hit the up arrow in here and just rerun the script, and we get that.
Yeah.
And while we don't have that nice, right, integrated environment, if I do something like I'm going to save it, you'll notice in VS Code I get the highlight here that there's an error on this line because I intentionally deleted the parentheses. You'll get kind of what you would get out of a compiler, right? You'll get this. There's an error on line 4, character position 1. We expected a close paren. You can go fix your script.
That's cool.
Okay. So you might ask, right, well, what is it about this environment? We've done this printf. This is kind of a very basic sample. What is it about this environment that makes it really kind of powerful?
Mm.
Like we talked about before, there's this object model that we've added in the debugger, right? And that's all accessible completely within JavaScript.
Yeah.
So If you've played with DX before, you can do this DX debugger. That's kind of like the debugger namespace that we have. I think we talked about this a little bit last year.
Start the tree.
Yeah, you can go through, you know, you can see sessions and what processes we're debugging and what threads and, right, go down to stack frames and stuff. And all of that is programmatically accessible within JavaScript.
Yeah. And I think that the very first, if we look at the top of the screen where that 2DH is, in the middle there, now the bottom of the screen,
2DH.
When you do threads. Then that is it NatViz that's saying, hey, show me the first frame. So near the top of the screen here.
Sorry.
So in here, this area here.
Yeah.
Is that a NatViz visualization that has chosen that the first frame will be shown? Or?
So it it could be a NatViz visualization. In this case, it's actually C++ code in the debugger.
Mm-hmm.
So you can this object model here, you can stitch together things from C++, from NatViz, from JavaScript. And at the end of the day, you have no idea where it came from when you look at the debugger. It's just an object.
Yeah.
Right? You have no idea where the individual pieces of that came from.
So there's some code somewhere that says, hey, I am going to represent this thread by showing you the symbol of the first frame.
Right.
I've made that decision, that UI, or that visualization decision somewhere.
Yep. Yeah.
So there's a few things like threads, processes, sessions, registers. Those are all exposed by the debugger, as you'd expect. But there's something like slightly more advanced concepts like handles, where you'd use like the bang handles extension.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually exposed by an extension, is extending the processes.
The process node.
The
yeah.
processes node to have handles under it. And then you can, there's a handles namespace.
So you would run bang handles and it would add it to the namespace and then you could look at it afterwards?
No, the debugger extension, like bang handle for kernel mode anyway, right? Bang handle is in KDX, I think KDX.dll.
Yeah.
When you load that extension or when the debugger loads that extension for you automatically, we just add, we know at that point, we're going to go and add a bunch of stuff under process.
Oh,
so whenever you look at a process, there's now process.io.handles. And it just appears.
Yep. So these, OK, I get you. Yep.
Yep. So like I said, you can access any of this from within JavaScript. So I can say, for instance, I'm going to grab the current process. I'm going to say host.currentProcess. And I just say for var thread of process.threads. And I can enumerate every thread now. And I'll just host diagnostics debug log thread. Right? I'll print every thread. Right, it's a very simple thing. This is all the latest ECMAScript 2015. We can do, you know, for something of to iterate containers. So it's really kind of powerful. Now I'll go back to the debugger and I'll hit up arrow and execute my script again. And you'll see, right, ran it thread, and I see again the string conversion for what that thread is.
Yeah.
And I've done this in, you know, what, just 5 or 6 lines of JavaScript code.
So if you're thinking of this as C#, it would be like the 2-string call on that object is what's
right, exactly.
Shoved in the middle.
And in fact, you can if you have a JavaScript object and you put the JavaScript 2-string on it, that's exactly what'll come out on the other side when you do a DX on, yep. on that. All right, so let me set up like how you might actually go and use this for something a little bit more realistic. Yeah. So I was debugging something the other day. I had an app on my system, and it was accessing a path that I was like, where did this come from, right? And I saw that it was in an environment variable, and I was like, well, who set this environment variable? It's pointing to some old path. I didn't know where that had come from, and so I went into the debugger. Right, and I've got command.exe up here, so this is kind of easy to play with environment variables. And the first thing I do is I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to set a breakpoint at kernel base set environment variable w, and I'll go. So we'll bring up my command prompt, and I'll just set foo is 42, and I hit my breakpoint, and I'll step past the function prolog. And now, yeah, I was using the internal debugger. At that point, I'm using the public one here, so I don't get local variables.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer in some respects. But set environment variable is a really simple function.
Yeah.
It's got two arguments, right? The name and the value. You know, via x64 calling convention, it's RCX and RDX, right? So I can go into the debugger now, and I can look at this and say, well, I want to look at the Unicode string at RCX. And right, we're setting foo to what's at RDX, right? 42.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this should be easy. And I'm like, go. And you know, set a command on the breakpoint. And I realized that it was setting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of environment variables. And I kind of just gave up. I'm like, this is going to take me forever.
Yeah.
Now, you can, I don't know if you've tried this, you can kind of write a conditional breakpoint with the .if that does string comparison.
I have been known to do it, and I have been known to pull my hair out in the process.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
So actually, I pulled up JavaScript. I'm like, this is a perfect use, right, of what we can do for JavaScript. So let me just show. We'll go into this, and we'll do a really quick example of how I do that. So imagine that this script right now is getting invoked where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. So I can say, let's grab the address of name, right? We know it's in RCX. So let me just grab RCX. I'm going to say host.currentThread.registersUserRCX. Right.
So before you go too far, do you support the pseudo registers so that you can kind of cheat between x86 and x64 and ARM if you have to? So like, you know, RCX would be, well, I don't know if it is a pseudo for that, but say it was the RIP, the instruction pointer, which is like RIP on x64, EIP on x86, PC on ARM, and...
Yeah, do we, right now, inside of thread.registers, no. In the state of the debugger, all the pseudo registers are in there for the current thread,
yeah.
or for the current UI state of the debugger. So yes, you could go host.namespace.debugger.state.
And if you ever have a question about that, I mean, it's actually really easy. If you just go over to the debugger right now and you wanted to see, oh, is RCX under user? Like, so you get to registers, and you can just do a DX right here, and you can see.
I can go debugger.state.pseudoregisters.
So there's the pseudo registers,
right.
and you can general.
Yeah, there you go. So there they are.
Right. So you can have them, and now you know it's the exact same namespace. So you can go back and you can go, it's state pseudo registers general and whichever one you happen to see here.
That's cool.
And so you can just literally, it's host.namespace. Whatever this string is, right? Debugger.state. Yeah. And that's completely accessible in JavaScript.
So yeah, I don't have this whole namespace layout memorized like Bill does. So whenever I'm trying to do a little script, I end up sitting in, I type DX debugger, and then I dig through like the namespace I'm trying to find to figure out exactly what I want for a couple minutes. And I say, this is the exact thing I want. Then I hop over to my JavaScript and I write it all out.
Yeah. I have a little tip for you guys, completely off topic. So I use MSDN a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means I use Bing to get there. Well, I have Bing rewards turned on. So every single day, I max out my Bing rewards.
You mean Microsoft?
Microsoft rewards, I got renamed, sorry. Yeah. So every single day, I max out my Microsoft rewards because every single day I do the 10, 20 searches. So I permanently just build up these $5, $10 a month of credit.
You think we can tie DX browsing into Microsoft rewards? Give people rewards for browsing code?
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, once I've got the address of this, right, I need to read. There's a Unicode string underneath there. So I can say name is host memory read wide string at name adder, and then we'll just print it for now. Host.diagnosticsdebuglog setting name, and we'll save that.
Is there, before we jump too far, is there equivalent of like in C Sharp how you do using, so you can collapse the namespace?
Yes. So it's not you can't collapse it that way. It's not using, but everything that you see here is an object. Mm-hmm. So I could say, for instance, var registers equals host.currentThread.registers.user. Yeah. And then I could say registers.rcx, registers.rdx.
So you could put diagnostics in D and go d.debuglog.
Absolutely. Yep. Cool. Everything is an object. So yep. You can absolutely do that.
And to reiterate, all of this is documented in the links.
Yes. So if I do a dot script run on our script again, syn channel 9, first.js, right, I see setting foo.
Yep.
Now we have the ability to run commands, so I'll set a breakpoint. I'm after the prologue, and I'll do dot script run. I got to escape because I'm in a string, channel 9, first.js, right, and I'll hit go. And now I'm going to go back to my command, and I'm going to set foo is hello. And I see, right, setting foo. And I've gone down here.
Yep.
And now, right, we'll go, you know, one more step, and I'll just cut and paste for a moment here. And I'll say
data or something.
Value adder, right? We know that's in RDX. It's the second argument. And value. Right, and we'll say setting that to value and go back to our script. And since this is rerunning by a dot script run, I don't even need to do anything right now. I'll just go back over to my command window. And oops, I need to go. Yep, I'm broken in. Let me go. Go back over to my command window, and I'll set, you know, hello equals 99. And I see now setting hello, forgot the end quote, but setting hello to 99. And I can go back here and I can do one other thing. I want this to be a conditional breakpoint, right? That's kind of what I wanted to do in that scenario. I want to say, I want to see everything that's being set. I just want to execute a G, right? And we have we don't yet have an object model that says, you know, step and set breakpoints. You can execute commands, right? So I can execute the G command. G. And I can just say, you know, if name not equal to test, right? Host, namespace, debugger, utility. And all this is documented once again, right? So you can find these things.
So utility seems to be the namespace for the iDebug
For the API kind of interfaces. Everything's under debugger.utility. So we can execute the G command in this case.
Sorry, I actually forget. Can you browse that in the debugger?
You can browse.
Can I do DX debugger utility?
You can. By default, I don't remember whether we showed methods in there. By default, if you've got a method on something, we hide it in DX.
Oh, okay.
If you do a dash V, we'll show you everything.
So I can do dash V dash H, and it'll describe everything.
And you'll see the help metadata that came from the help, and right. So you'll actually see everything that comes through there.
So I was told years ago, and I have no idea whether this is good advice or bad advice, but to always use GC and not G in a conditional statement. So if you had put it in, you know, in the breakpoint BP something, and then run a command semicolon, if you wanted to continue from that point, like traditionally it would have been like a DT command or something. I was always told to put GC, G continue, rather than G. And I don't know whether that was actually a wives' tale or what. And I've always done it since.
So the funny thing about the debugger, so I learned something new today, GC. That's one of the things that we're trying to solve, right, by doing some of this is like, oh, there's this other command that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, we actually do a wait here. So you can do code where you do a G and then the JavaScript will resume if like the next time the breakpoint is hit or something like that. So you can actually, we do a wait, the equivalent of a wait for event if you've done the iDebug control APIs after we get.
And I think this is different because this is an execute which is not in the bug debug context. And I think it's only when it's in the D script of the conditional and that GC.
Yeah, we don't want you to have to worry about that complexity as much as possible anymore.
G is great. Use G in the future. Let's assume that my tip from years ago was incorrect and that G was sufficient.
So I can go back here. And now I'll go into the command window. And, you know, I set bar is 99. And I get setting bar to 99. And
but it foo continues is running.
42. And it continues running. And set test is 999. And I'm broken into the debugger.
Yeah.
Right, I've done this now, conditional breakpoint that's, maybe it's more verbose than the random dot alias whatever that's required for this and dot if, but I can read this and understand this.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and it's just, you get that degree of power along with that.
I remember years and years ago, I had a situation where a create file failed. And so I put a conditional breakpoint on the end of the function so that when RCX wasn't zero, or whatever register it is that represents the error code, break in, because I wanted to see, you know, what was the error code for this failed create file call. But you know, obviously create file is called way too busily in any other situation. And it was very hard to work out where the last line was and all these other things. So I can definitely see this being much easier to deal with.
Right.
Definitely, very cool.
So let me show you one other example, and I'm not gonna write the code because it's a little bit more verbose than this. I'll just switch over to it. So I've got this other example here that's kind of like, and I'll show you this in the debugger. This is kind of like a bang unique stack, right? And how you might do this in JavaScript. So let me go over to, I'm not going to use the command. I've got Notepad up in another debugger. And if I look at the threads, right, whoops, I want to look at their stacks. This is just started in. There's a bunch of like, there's a bunch of worker threads that are just blocked waiting.
Yeah.
Noise, right? So if I run the unique stack command, right, we see there's four total threads, but there's duplicate call stacks.
Yeah.
So let me load up jsprovider.dll, and I'll script run channel 9, unique 1.js. And I've kind of done this slightly differently. I've done this as kind of a tree view, right, where you see here's this branch, there's one thread in it. Right?
Oh, that's
there's
cool.
This branch, there's three threads here. Right, and so every indentation is another frame, but you see the there can be multiple things at that, right? The root level branched here.
The new term for that coming out of the Windows Performance Toolkit is the flame view.
The flame view.
Oh yeah.
They call it the flame
view. It's a cool view.
Yep. Yeah. So this is just right, and most of this here is there's some display code and some stuff we'll use. But I've created, right, you can use classes that are in ES6. And I've just created this class for every node that, you know, contains the list of threads that are in there, the function call name, the string for the frame, and what children, right? What child nodes. And then there's, you know, 20 lines-ish, 25 lines of JavaScript that goes through all the threads of a process, right? Can say, get the frame count. I'm using, you'll notice I say thread.stack.frames.count. I'm using link inside of JavaScript here. To be able to just get the frame count.
So you want to step back. That was a big jump there. So
yes.
So what does that mean? So why isn't that just a namespace? How's this link?
So every kind of like if you're familiar with this in C#, right? This is what we did a year ago. Anything that the data model understands is iterable at the data model level. Mm-hmm. We go and we say, oh, there's a set of APIs that we're going to put on top of that, the link APIs, right? Dot where, dot select, dot, dot contains, dot
first,
right?
Dot
first,
last,
dot last, dot count, right? There's a couple, the two dozen or so of these APIs that are on there, just like there is for any iterable, mm-hmm. right, or whatever it is in C#.
Yeah.
And to be a little bit clear, it's link-like. It's not exactly the same implementation of link. We make some slight changes for the debugger.
Right, mostly around error propagation.
Yeah,
right?
Error otherwise, propagation tends to be the big
one. Otherwise, it's largely what you expect from C#. Yep. But we're able to do that on any iterable. So if some debugger extension comes in and says, I can give you a collection of stack frames mm-hmm. and returns you an iterable, it gets link on top of it automatically. You don't have to do anything to get that.
So up to frames is part of the namespace, and then the dot count is the link part
is
of
the link part of it that just shows up.
So you could have gone, yeah, a where clause in there, filter it down for some where frames is greater than 4. And
I could do that and pass a JavaScript function as the predicate for link, and that'll all work.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is really, and I'll show you what I mean by that in a second. This is really kind of just a basic, right? We're going to go through the frames, get the string conversion, right? If the current node has it, move to that. Put the current thread in the list. If it doesn't, create a new node.
Yeah.
Kind of done, right? And I'll go through an example here of how I'm going to use this. There's one function that I added that's not used right now that's like find the entry, and then there's a display, which is right just a few lines of JavaScript to display that tree kind of view that
to
we
walk
get.
It, yeah.
Now again, one of the things that I talked about, right? Wrong debugger window, is that we don't want the debugger extension to be this, right, text in, text out. We want it to be objects in, objects out, right? We want it to extend some concept.
Yeah.
And so what I'm going to do is just a quick example. So the debugger has a concept of what a thread is, right? So if I ask a debugger what the current thread is, I get the thread. It's got an ID, it's got a stack, it's got the registers, it's got some stuff about the environment of the thread. I can go and, from this JavaScript extension, maybe I want to say, add something to thread to show me what other threads have the same call stack, mm-hmm. using what I just built.
Yep. It's peers, or it's clones. It's twins.
It's twins.
I'm a twin, so great name.
There you go. So I can come back through here, and I can just take this code, and I'll add just a couple of simple things. So I'm going to add another function, and I'm going to call this initialize script. And a debugger extension implements initialize script instead of invoke script. This is basically the function that tells the debugger how you want to manipulate the object model of the debugger for this extension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to return, this is again documented, there's an array that you return that tells the debugger what you want to change. I'm going to return this record that tells the debugger I want to attach this class I'm going to write called thread extension to debugger.models.thread.
Is this example you're writing one of the ones we have on MSDN or no?
No,
yes, it will be.
It can be.
I was going to say, if it's not, we can definitely write a blog post about it with kind of some more detailed comments going through, you know, exactly what everything's doing.
Yep, we can absolutely do that.
And we'll definitely just dump this thing at the bottom of the of the forum page as well.
So I'll create this class that I just named called Thread Extension. And I'll create a property on there called Identical Stacks. Right, and before I actually do this, I'm just going to, just to demonstrate, I'm going to return hello world for just a moment.
Yeah.
So I'll go back to the debugger, and I will dot script run that script again. Now that's going to, I still had an invoke script method, so I'm still going to print. But now when I look at cur thread, there's this field that just showed up called identical stacks, right? And it's hello world.
Yep.
And you know, right, I'm going to hit I, and I'm going to hit the tab key, and the ID field is there. And identical stacks is there, right? We get all the same functionality that we expect everywhere across the debugger on this extension. So go back to JavaScript.
So like in my world, I use hashes a lot to work out uniqueness. So I could just add the bang analyze hash.
You absolutely could.
Yeah.
Yep. You can add on to anything in that object model that we've put a name onto, right? So sessions, processes, threads, stack frames, all the way down to local variables.
Yeah.
If you want, you can write a debugger extension which changes the view of the data model view of what local variables are in a particular stack frame.
Mm, very cool.
You can actually go and do that. So we'll write another really simple class. I'm going to call it thread same stacks. It'll take a constructor. It'll pass the thread for which we want to find the same stacks for. And it's going to stash that away for a moment. You'll notice I use this underscore underscore convention a bunch. So anytime in a debugger extension in JavaScript that you use underscore underscore, by convention, we say it's a private name. Mm-hmm. We're not going to export it out of this script context.
Your public versus private metaphor.
Right. And it's by convention only, right? JavaScript doesn't recognize that. It's just we don't export it across the boundary.
Yeah.
Because this is ES6, I can actually write generator functions. I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, you C sharp.
I'm a C++ guy.
Do you know C sharp?
One of those old C++ guys I was talking about.
So
I'm one of those dinosaurs.
Yeah. For your viewers who have done C sharp, right? There's this yield return that you can write an iterator by just, you know, yield one, yield two, whatever it is, and it turns it into an iterator. JavaScript now has the same thing. So I can say symbol.iterator, and I'm going to create a function called symbol.iterator. The star here is what tells me it's a generator function. And I'm going to use that class that I created up here. So I'm going to say, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go back, and I've got the thread. I want to get the process that this thread is in. If I were writing this for myself, I could just say current thread. But because this is a debugger extension, I might be looking at the non-current UI thread.
Yes.
I should actually go back and find which process this is, not look at the current state of the UI. So I can say, for instance, var session is, or sorry, let's get the context of the thread. This.thread.hostContext, and that's an object that's kind of got the information about where this came from. The guts of where this came from. So I can say session is host namespace debugger sessions get value.
Now I'm going to point out, he has no notes on the table here, guys. He's just
process
top
is
of the head. This is serious.
Session dot,
this is some seriously good programming.
Processes, so we get the process. And then I will create this, what I call it, stack map.
Like I said, the average person spends like 30 seconds or so in the debugger doing DX to figure out exactly what they're writing.
Yep. Whoops. And this shouldn't be bracket CTX. This should be get value at.
Oh, of course not.
Obviously.
Sorry.
Lame.
So I've got this find entry function in the map that finds the leaf node in the map for a particular thread.
Did you just get IntelliSense there? Or?
You do. So VS Code recognizes things that are in the same file.
So it's the local file.
It's the local file that I'm getting IntelliSense off of, yeah. And that's just courtesy of the editor that I'm using.
Yeah.
So I'll say if entry not equal to null for var thread of entry dot, what is it, threads, yield thread.
So that kind of like emits it as an object.
Emits it from the iterator. So the iterator will return that object, will suspend execution of this function. The next time you ask for another value, it'll pick it back up at that point.
Your next 14-part series on writing a debugger extension will be writing, learning how to write JavaScript.
But I think it only takes about 3 episodes rather than 14.
Yeah. It'll be 14 minutes. That's the
So I can return a new thread same stacks for this. And you'll notice this is an extension for thread, right? Because I attached it to debugger.models.thread. So when I use the this pointer here, I'm actually talking about the thread.
Yeah.
Right. So I've made this change. I'm going to go back into the debugger.
And just to kind of emphasize, one of the decisions we made when choosing JavaScript was, while you and I aren't JavaScript experts and we don't get that, it's learning how generators work in JavaScript. That's the kind of thing you can search on Bing, get your free money, and then learn that without having to have someone write a specific thing about using JavaScript in Windebug.
Not to mention that JavaScript's like 70% of all programming jobs on the planet right now.
Yeah,
people kind of know it.
Yep.
C++ is, I think, down to 17%. Yeah. So yeah, and then the debugger.
Where does the debugger scripting language come in on that list?
Well, that's, everybody knows that.
Through the floor somewhere.
It's like 12 people.
So I'll run that script again, and now when I go back to cur thread, right, I look at identical stacks. Oops, I messed up somewhere. Oh, no. Ooh. So that I don't have to edit this live, I'm going to script unload unique one.js.
When we put that in the bottom, we will put the right
one. We will put the right version, because apparently I can't type code completely correctly live on stage.
Or we could put the broken one and let them figure it out themselves.
Channel 9, scripts, and
we might tell you which one, though.
unique stacks. Okay.
I have a request for you, a change request. Have tab completion for file paths.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
So if you go to the feedback hub under developer tools, developer platform, there's debugging tools for Windows.
Yep.
Everyone else, all your viewers can go upvote you, and we will prioritize that appropriately.
You know what?
Yep. Okay. So right, I've looked at identical stacks, and for this, there's two threads, right? TID2784 and TID58 that have identical that are the worker threads that have identical stacks to this.
So if you scroll up, that's the same thing you were seeing. That's the threads in branch that has those three things listed.
Yep, there's three. So I don't show the current thread in here.
Yeah.
So we're on thread 15DC, but the other two threads are these two.
Yeah, so that's even easier to read.
Yeah. Yep. And so the cool thing about this is once it's in this object model, right, I hit dot, and I'm going to start S tab. And you notice select shows up, right? I didn't write any link in my JavaScript, but yet I can use this, and I can say, for instance, select thread to thread.id. And we've done a link query on top of what we just implemented in JavaScript.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of PowerShell, how you can pipe it and say, just filter it down to this thing and stuff like that. It's kind of analogous to that. Completely different tech, but analogous to that.
Yes.
Cool.
And so if you wanted to get the actual functionality of Bang Unique Stacks, you'd have to do a count there, and then you'd be done?
You could have done, dot count. Right, and there's two.
There you go.
It'll tell you there's two. Right, and you could have called that from JavaScript just as easily as you could do that. So this kind of allows you to not only extend all sorts of things about the debugger, right, processes and threads. I can do pretty much anything I could do in any of the other models. You can do visualizers in JavaScript. I can go and do basic. I can extend the functions that are available in the expression evaluator. So I can go back and say, function add A and B, return A plus B, right? Just a silly little function, and I can go back and it's going to warn me that there's no main function. because I use .run. If you use .load, it won't do that. And I can say script contents dot add. You notice add shows up in tab completion. Add 5 and 7. Hex C, decimal, right? It's 12.
Yeah.
And it's JavaScript, so I can, right? It works like you'd expect, right? I can pass hello and world, and I get the string hello world back, right? So I can extend, I can mix and match, I can pass anything from native code, from the data model, from NatViz into JavaScript or vice versa, and it all plays together.
You get some weird things, like, you know, you might have this string that you want to crunch into, you know, the high and low bits and spit out some objects that represent, you know, the high and low word of a file timestamp or something. Yeah. Always up with weird things like that.
Yep.
And it's just a big block of Q word normally that actually means things and stuff. Very right. cool. Very, very cool. So thanks, guys. That was really good. Obviously, something that will take a little while to get used to, but you know, it's definitely a new world and way more power than what C++ has. Way easier to extend the model. And I think it's going to be a really good evolution for the debugger way forward. Any last thoughts about where we're going in the future and how this is going to help people?
No, I think we covered everything. I think
we're good.
Yeah,
cool. As always, you can email these guys directly, windbgfb@microsoft.com. Use the feedback app under, what was it, debugger, developer experiences, debugging tools for Windows.
Developer platform.
Developer platform. Debugging tools for Windows. I will have this feedback blogged before you see this aired, and so you can upvote the tab completion to pass. As far as the Frag tool goes, as always, shove your comments and questions down below and email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we will see you next week.